These are the descendants of Isaac, Abraham's son. In the lectionary, during the what we call ordinary time, you get to pick what you want to do for the Old Testament reading. So since Pentecost, we chose what's called track one, which means that for most of the ordinary time, so Pentecost to basically Advent, we're going to hear the story of Abraham because it's a long story. But even though it's a long story, the same kind of things keep happening. And to give you the context, just to remind you, this story begins because God promises Abraham he's going to make his descendants like the sands of the seashore, the stars of the heavens. And yet, when Abraham gets this promise, his wife is barren. And when she finally has children, there's a conflict between the two children. Her child, Isaac, and Hagar's child, Ishmael. And so already it seems as though this promise that God has made can no way come to fruition. But finally he gets Isaac. Isaac waits till he is 40 years old to become married, which also is a challenge to this promise. It just keeps piling on. And when he gets married, he marries a woman who, for 20 years of their marriage, is unable to have a child. So once again, it looks as though God is in a predicament that he may not be able to overcome. And Isaac at this point, and this is what I find is so curious about this, Isaac prays to the Lord, and he prays to the Lord on behalf of his wife, Rebekah. Not on behalf of this promise that was made to his father, but on behalf of his wife, Rebekah, who for 20 years has had to endure kind of the scorn of being a barren woman, being able to bear no children. Isaac cannot take it anymore. It's not on his own behalf or the promise's behalf, but he prays on behalf of his wife that she'd have a child. And she does. She conceives, and I don't know if it's better than having one, but she gets two out of this, all right? In fact, it's such a traumatic pregnancy that she says, I wish I would die. She said, what is it to me that I live? Because there's so much going on inside my belly right now. These two are fighting so much and moving so much, I wish I would just die. And the Lord comes to her and says, delivers this oracle that yes, there are two people that don't like each other very much in your womb, and that's going to have consequences to the future. So once she has these children, one who is named because you don't get this necessarily just from the reading this morning, says he's red and his body is covered in like a hairy mantle or a cloak. And so she names him Esau, which by the way just means hairy. So she named him, he was covered in hair, just called him hairy. And the second one comes out and he seems to have a hold of his brother's heel, which is the word, they're part of the word of his name, Jacob. Though, if you read this story, I'll let you know, his name is not so easily defined. Because even though it's kind of given here that he's named after the body part of his brother he's holding on to, his name is also built off the root that means crooked in the heart. That he is a little bit of a schemer. So once we get their name, we get to find out what they do and how they live into those names. And the hairy one goes out and he likes to hunt. And he brings in pelts and he brings in food and he brings in hides. And in fact, literally, it says that his father loves him. We got to hear because of the food he provides. But literally, what the idiom is in the Hebrew text this morning is his father loves him because of the game in his mouth. That the image of Esau is of a prey animal coming in with another animal in his mouth to offer it up to the pack to eat. And so Esau, the hairy one, every image of Esau is that he is an animal. He is just, he's vicious. He kills things, he carries them in his mouth, and his father loves the hairiness about him. Jacob, on the other hand, stays in the tent. This schemer, this grabber of heels. I mean, to trip somebody by the heel is not a very, it seems not as strong as just tackling them outright. I mean, imagine if you're watching a football game, you'd much rather your guy get tackled around the torso than he be tripped up on the 1 yard line by somebody who just reach out and gets his shoestring. And so Jacob though he knows his father likes to eat the food that Esau brings in, is going to make some food himself. He is going to provide some food, and ironically, it's vegetarian food. He's making beans or lentils. Red lentils is what Esau says. He said, when he comes in from hunting and he's hungry, which means he wasn't very good hunting that time. You don't come in from hunting when you got stuff as hungry as he is. So he has completely failed on the hunt. And when he gets in, he says exactly what his mother said when these two babies are fighting in her womb. It's verbatim. He's got a stomach problem too. And he says, what is it to me if I live? I'm so hungry. He's got pain in his belly. And so Jacob says, well, I've got the solution for the pain in your belly. I'll give you some of this vegetarian bean soup I just made. And he must have been really hungry if he ate it. So he does. He just takes it. He says, what do I want to do with my birthright? I'm hairy and I'm strong and I'm a hunter. I'll just eat this right now and I'll survive. And thus, this prophecy or this oracle that Rebekah received while they were fighting in her womb comes to fruition. And once again, this promise that God made to Abraham is in peril. Because now we got two sons, they're going to kill each other eventually. Or that is the path that they are headed on. But God somehow is going to make this work out. God's promise is still somehow going to work out. In fact, there are more perils to come with these two. But these are perils that are set up that God can overcome. And one is the peril of the schemer. That you would think God would have picked some better way to make his promise come about than somebody who wants to manipulate other people to get what they want. But in fact, that's one choice, Jacob. But the other choice to make the promise come about is this hairy man who kills things. And that doesn't seem like a very good route either. And now, if that's not enough, these two are enemies for the rest of their lives, almost. So God is going to have to overcome the schemer. He's going to have to overcome the hairy one. He's going to have to overcome their enmity with one another. And he does it. But he doesn't do it because he just does it and makes it happen. He does it because the schemer and the hairy one learn two important lessons. The first one is, this we'll hear in a few weeks, is that Jacob eventually, after years and years of running from his brother, will just decide one night, I am going to go see him. He's my brother, and whatever happens will happen. Jacob faces the schemes of his life. All in that moment, other schemes too, he's able to go and face them all by meeting his brother who he wronged in the first place. And then Esau is going to have to do something remarkable. Because when they meet with their armies later on in this story, it is fully expected that what started with a bowl of lentil soup will end in something else that's red. It will end in a battle. But it doesn't. And it doesn't because Esau learns to forgive his brother. For even the schemes that he will carry out later in the story, Esau just gets over it. And he says, you are my brother. And though the promise goes on, and the promise goes on not because God picks another way, and the promise doesn't go on because God changes one of their hearts in some way that could only be changed by God. The promise goes on because these two brothers, who fought from the time they were in their mother's womb, can face one another and they can forgive one another. And I think that's the lesson of the promise. All of the perils that come to God's promise, and they are many. They are generational, which is one thing you've got to learn if you want to read Abraham's story and his descendants. The peril comes in every generation. It came in every generation then, it comes in every generation now. And for us to move forward, It means that we have to face the schemes that we have caused in the past by facing the people that we caused them to. But in that moment, we have to have those folks not meet us with our armies and with enmity, but with forgiveness and compassion. Amen.